Hello, this is Bob Keebler on behalf of Lineberg Information Services. Today's guest will be Jonathan Blockmacher, and our topic today will be negative basis and passive loss rules and their impact on 1022. Jonathan, good morning.
Good morning, Bob, and thank you very much for allowing me to participate in this with you.
Jonathan, we all know that carryover basis is the 2010 law of the day if you elect out of the estate tax. And what some of us may not have spent enough time on are two factors. One is negative basis, and the other is how passive loss carryforwards that I held on the day I died are going to impact my day-to-death return, future returns, and how there's a major difference between how passive losses are treated under 1022 and 1014. So, Jonathan, let's start with negative basis, and then we'll come back to passive losses.
Well, thank you very much, Bob. Let me say by way of background that, of course, if you do not elect out of estate tax, you're not going to have to deal with the carryover basis rules. But in a number of circumstances, you are going to want to elect out of estate tax and go into carryover basis. One of those is where you have a very large taxable estate, and the immediate knee-jerk reaction will be, gee, I want to avoid this horribly high federal estate tax of 35% and go into a carryover basis system. As Bob and I both know, even though it seems like if you have more than $5 million, or perhaps more than $4 million if you've used exemption during lifetime, and it's a fully taxable estate, that the immediate reaction is, oh, heck, I want to be in the carryover basis system. But there are a number of factors, and Bob and I are going to talk about two of them, which may mean that you should make the opposite decision of what you think is going to be the decision, or at least you want to consider those factors and ensure that they don't produce something that says, I really should go the other way. The first is what is known as negative basis property. So let's begin talking about what a negative basis asset means. It means that the income tax basis of the asset, the point from which you would measure your gain and loss, is lower than the debt against the property. For example, let's say I bought a building for $1 million, and of course my purchase price of $1 million would be my basis. Basis, of course, can change over time, either because I make improvements to the property or because I take depreciation. But let's just say it's just a piece of raw land. It's not going to be depreciable, and I'm not going to improve it. That means my basis is going to stay at $1 million. But let's say that the property grows in value. I made a good purchase, and the land from the time I bought it when it was worth $1 million has now grown to $5 million. And I need some cash, so I go to the bank and I say, hey, this property is worth $5 million. There's no debt against it. Go out and have it appraised. I'd like you to loan $3 million on that property. And by the way, I don't want to be responsible for this. I don't want any recourse against me. If I don't make the payments on time or for any other reason you're in jeopardy, you can foreclose against the property, sell it, and get the $3 million plus the accrued interest. When I borrow the $3 million against the land, my basis still remains $1 million, but now I have $3 million of debt against the property. And the law, specifically under the very famous Crane case decided by the United States Supreme Court, and then the Tough case also decided by the Supreme Court, and the regulations under 1001, essentially say that if I sell the property, I have to report as part of the amount realized the $3 million of debt against the property. So if I go to Bob and the property, say, is now worth $10 million, and I say to Bob, why don't you buy this property? Bob says, great idea. I'm going to put up a shopping center or something. I agree it's worth $10 million. But Bob says, Jonathan, I'm not going to pay you $10 because there's $3 million of debt on the property. So I now get $7 million from Bob, and you might think, gee, your basis, Jonathan, is $1 million. You sold it for a net of $7 million, therefore you only have $6 million of gain. But what the tax law says is that I have to treat the $3 million of debt against the property as part of the amount realized. So I take the $7 I've received from Bob, plus the three of debt that's against the property. So the amount realized is $10 million. My basis is $1 million. So my gain, instead of being six, is now nine. Another way in which you can get negative basis, and this often happens, is where you buy an asset which is depreciable. For example, a piece of property that's improved, then I can take depreciation, and every time I take that depreciation for income tax purposes, my basis will be reduced. For example, I buy an office building for $1 million, and I pay, say, $1,000, $100,000 in cash, and I get seller financing for the $9 million. My income tax basis is still $1 million, even though I got seller financing and I didn't actually pay out of my pocket $1 million. I paid $100,000. And then I got a $900,000 loan, I still have a basis of $1 million. But now I use depreciation. And let's say over the years I take $600,000 of depreciation. Well, now my basis has been reduced from $1 million, what I paid from the property, down to $400,000. Now, in both those circumstances, the liability is going to be greater than the basis. Remember, I went out and I financed the building in my first example where I borrowed $3 million after I don't. In fact, it was just a raw piece of land. My basis is $1 million. Whenever the debt against the property, in that example $3 million, is greater than basis, the property is said to have a negative basis. Similarly, in the example where I bought the piece of improved real estate for $1 million and I took $600,000 of depreciation, my basis has now been reduced to $400,000. But if the debt is still $9 million, I now have a negative basis of the difference between those two, or $500,000. There's no way, we believe, under the law, that you can avoid recognizing the gain on the negative basis, even if you give it to charity. So, for example, if this piece of property I own, which I bought for $1 million, upon which I've taken $600,000 of depreciation, my basis is now four. Let's say it's gone up to $2 million and I give it to charity. A wonderful thing I've done. But the tax law treats it as though I had received $500,000. So I have to take that amount into income, the extent of the negative basis, even though I gave it to charity or I gave it to a friend or anything. The only exceptions would be if I transfer it to a completely disregarded entity for income tax purposes, such as a single-member LLC or a grantor trust. In fact, the only way out of negative basis property is to die. That's because under Section 1.742-1 of the regulations, the basis of your property when you die in the hands of the recipient is the estate tax value plus the debt on the property. So it's a very good thing, because when you die, you get the basis restored even for the amount of the debt. And by the way, even though the debt wasn't part of your basis before you died, it's a great thing. And I think that Bob and some others may counsel estate planning by suicide, but generally it isn't a good idea. But death would bear you out, and it was a phenomenally good result, because even if the value was zero, you got to add the debt back into the basis in the hands of the inheritor, and the inheritor then could measure his or her gain or loss, including a loss, by that debt at a minimum. Plus, you could take depreciation if it was a depreciable asset, at least equal to the amount of debt. So dying used to be a very good thing, except for 2010. And if you elect out of estate tax and into carryover basis, you're not going to get that 1014 step-up in basis. And even though it's not explicit, it seems quite apparent to me that Regulation 1.742-1, which says you take the estate tax value and add the debt to that, that doesn't apply for a carryover basis asset. And in fact, Section 1022G, as in golf, specifically deals with negative basis property. Essentially, that section says, if you don't leave it to charity, you don't have to recognize gain when the decedent dies with respect to negative basis property. Now, that was the law before, and they've maintained that. But if you give it to charity to try to avoid anybody having to recognize the negative basis at some time, then you're going to have gain recognition on the decedent's final return. And that's a factor that you should consider in looking at the total picture of whether you want to have a state tax at carryover basis. In addition, Section 1022G essentially says that there'll be no gain when the executor under the will or the trustee of a revocable trust, if the negative basis asset was held there, distributes it out to the beneficiary. So that's a good result. Now, how does this come back into play for us? Well, it comes back into play that even if you have a very, very large estate and you'd be prone to elect out of estate tax and into carryover basis, you may be making the wrong decision. Let's take an example. Let's say I have a piece of property which I purchased and I paid $20 million for it, but by the time I die, I've taken $16 million of depreciation, so my basis is only $4 million. But I have borrowed against the property and the mortgage is $44 million. Let's assume when I die, the gross value of that real estate, remember I bought it for $20, I've taken $16 of depreciation for tax purposes, but that piece of property I bought many years ago when I die is worth $54 million. My basis is $4 million. And let's assume that there's a $44 million mortgage loan against that property. So the net equity and the net value is $10 million. Now, one of the things you could say is, gee, you don't want to pay estate tax on $10 million. That would be $3.5 million of estate tax you'd have to pay. That's true. But then I'd be stuck with the negative basis. And that would mean that if I sold the property for, let's say, $54 million, my basis is only $4 million. I'm now going to have to pay income tax on $40 million. And what is worse is that of the ordinary income that of the depreciation I took, that $16 million, that's going to be taxed probably as ordinary income in my hands. The balance of the $34 million of gain is going to be taxed under Section 1250 at 25%. So my combined taxes, if I choose the carryover basis route, is going to be in excess of $10 million, whereas my estate tax would only be $3.5 million. And that's an exceptionally important thing to think about, and you're probably going to be better off in paying the $3.5 million of estate tax so that the basis is going to be the net equity value of 10 and then adding the debt of 44 in, so the basis now is $54 million. So it can be depreciated again with that high basis, or it can be sold without any gain or loss, and you're going to avoid the capital gains tax on the $44 million difference between fair market value of 54 and the $4 million basis. So that's exceptionally important to consider. And in a number of cases, you're going to be better off, again, staying with the estate tax and not electing out of estate tax and into carryover basis where you have a negative basis asset. By the way, it may not be obvious that you have negative basis asset because sometimes it's through a partnership. And that means you're going to have to make a careful look at everything the decedent owned to make sure that even indirectly there's no negative basis property in the estate, or if it's there, it's not going to tilt so that you decide to stay in carryover basis or rather elected to carryover basis rather than staying with estate tax. Now, there's another thing that Bob mentioned, which, again, is one of those things that's not so obvious, and that's with respect to passive losses. As I'm sure everyone knows, Section 469 of the Internal Revenue Code essentially says you can't deduct losses from a business if you are not active in that business. And there are some complicated rules, but essentially you've got to work for hundreds of hours in the business in order for the losses to be deductible against your other income. So if you're a practicing lawyer, as I was, or you're a practicing accountant, as Bob is, and you have lots of income, I think Bob told me he expects to make $3 million this year, and Bob has lots of cash, he's made lots of investments, but unfortunately for Bob, those investments haven't turned out so well, and there are lots of losses. Unfortunately, because Bob practices accounting full-time and doesn't get involved with the operation of these little businesses, whether it's a hot dog stand or an office building, he can't deduct the losses against his income that he earns as an accountant. But he doesn't lose them. They're carried forward, and he can deduct them when he gets rid of the investment, or Bob dies. The tax law, section 469G, as in golf, 2, says, when you die, you can deduct those passive losses on your final return, but only to the extent those losses exceed the basis in the hands of the inheritor. Now, if you are in an estate tax system where you're going to get a step-up in basis under section 1014, it may be that all the passive losses are gone. Maybe you have a $100,000 passive loss from the operation of these businesses, but if they're worth net more than $100,000 in your estate, there's going to be a step-up in basis, and as a consequence, you'll lose the entire passive loss. And in a circumstance like that, you, again, might be better off staying with a carryover basis system in order to be able to use those losses. And in fact, keep in mind that that is going to be kind of a pull and a push. On the one hand, you want the stepped-up basis, but probably you're only going to avoid tax at a 15% rate, whereas the passive losses are generally ordinary and can be taken against ordinary income, which may be at a 35% rate. So even if you wind up paying some capital gains tax at the end of the day when you sell the asset at a 15% rate, the ability to lock in and be able to use on Bob's final income tax return those passive losses may be a beneficial one. There's a further factor that I'm not sure everybody thinks of. Keep in mind that when Bob dies, let's say Bob died in 2010, if we stay in the estate tax system, we can deduct the income taxes which are owed at the time of his death on his final return for estate tax purposes. That's a good Section 2053 deduction. But if we decide to stay out of estate tax and stay in the carryover basis system so we can use the passive losses, there really won't be any deduction for the inherent income tax liability. And again, what this shows is you've got to be very careful in doing the calculations and considering all of the factors in order to determine if you want to elect out of estate tax and into carryover basis. So, Bob, as you requested, I've addressed those two items. Do you have any follow-up questions?
No, Jonathan, that was a wonderful summary of two very tough issues. And what we're seeing is every day we peel back another layer of the onion on this, and it is becoming more complicated. And I suspect by the end of the year we will understand this much better than we do now. Now, the other thing I want to share with everybody is remember Form 8389 is going to be due 90 days after the IRS issues the form. And with instructions. So we want to keep our eye on that. Lissy will do everything possible to keep you fully informed of these developments. And Jonathan, I just, on behalf of Lissy and on behalf of our listeners, I just want to thank you for sharing your expertise today.
Well, Bob, thank you very much. It's always a pleasure and an honor dealing with you. And look forward to working with you again in the near future, Bob.
Thanks, Jonathan.
Bye-bye.
Jonathan? Do we lose Jonathan?